This is Kathy reading the Herald and Review today for July the 29th. Starting with the front page, some photographer from Dalton City, Joseph Wrestler, who works for the Herald and Review, has taken some gorgeous pictures, and it's of a sunset. The sky is orange, and then above the haze is this, it's yellow with the cloud formations. It's a beautifully shadowed picture, so you can see the outlines of some of the gravestones at the cemetery with that really pretty orange and yellow sky up above. And then he took a picture of some silos at dusk, huge silos, like four of them in a row. And then he took an interesting picture of it looks like a drying barn, and he took the picture through the center where they would have parked the tractors, and there's corn growing on the other side. So just a nice way to look at yesterday. On the headlines for today, though, stressed Michigan battles outbreak. Public health workers in the state stretched thin following the Trump cuts, by Julie Steenhuisen and Tom Polansic. Cyclosporiasis. 2 weeks before the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention issued its cyclosporiasis health warning on July 14th, Michigan warned of an unusually large outbreak of parasitic disease that causes explosive diarrhea. New cases are still being reported in the nine-state outbreak. Michigan is the hardest hit with 9,253 cases as of Monday. The state is straining to keep up with the caseload, in part due to federal funding cuts, as well as what officials in two counties and a third source familiar with the state's response call lagging or limited communication from federal agencies. As a result, state and county health officials borrowed staff and recruited volunteers to sleuth out potential causes for the outbreak beyond the bagged lettuce linked to Taylor Farms and Taco Bell, Michigan state and local health officials said. The strain illustrates how states struggle to get ahead of a fast-spreading foodborne outbreak without the federal resources that were available in past health emergencies. Michigan has 23 fewer infectious disease workers and 123 fewer county health staff after the Trump administration in 2025 canceled about $12 billion in COVID-19 pandemic-era grants to states. We have had to pull in dozens of staff from other areas, from hepatitis C and interns who are working on gun violence prevention, said Dr. Natasha Bagdasarian, Michigan's chief medical executive. Ingham County, which includes most of the state capital, Lansing, reported about 700 cases. However, its health department staff of five nurses only investigated about half of those. It decided to drop old cases and focus on new ones, said Anna Barna, deputy health officer for Ingham County, which has a population of 290,000. That way we can try to help the state and feds understand what is still causing people to get cyclospora, she said. Cuts to federal agencies made the response more challenging, former CDC officials and food safety experts said. The Trump administration's cuts to the U.S. Agency for International Development also cut $40 million in funding that supported a CDC lab that investigates parasitic diseases. Resignations and staffing cuts last year also took a toll, said Dan Jernigan, a former senior CDC official. The Food and Drug Administration on July 17th linked the outbreak to iceberg lettuce served at Taco Bell restaurants sourced from privately held Taylor Farms' operations in central Mexico. The agency said it is still investigating other sources. Taco Bell, owned by Young Brands, stopped using iceberg lettuce supplied from Taylor Farms nationwide, and Taylor Farms removed lettuce sourced from central Mexico from shelves. The CDC reported 4,173 laboratory-confirmed domestic cases of cyclosporiasis and said there are more than 7,400 unconfirmed cases nationwide. Michigan's investigation did not identify a single fast food chain as a source, Bagdasarian said. She noted that about 12% of the patients have no clear link to having consumed lettuce or eaten at a fast food chain. In past outbreaks, the CDC took a leadership role in coordinating information among states, the official said. The state then passes information along to local health departments, but Barna said there were several instances where she first learned new information from the news. Typically, states involved in a large outbreak would be meeting with the CDC at least weekly, said John Besser, a former CDC food safety expert. While Michigan received prompt answers to technical questions put to the CDC and FDA, officials are not having regular formal meetings with their federal partners, said a source familiar with the state's response, who is not authorized to speak publicly. A spokesperson for the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services rejected that characterization, saying that the CDC was meeting daily with FDA and state officials nationwide to share updates and gather information about the outbreak. Spokespeople for Ohio and West Virginia, both of which are part of the 9-state outbreak, said they had regular calls with federal agencies. The CDC sent a group of epidemic intelligence experts to Ohio on July 22nd for 3 weeks, the HHS spokesperson said. Because Cyclospora, the parasite involved in the outbreak, cannot be traced using advanced testing methods, states rely largely on laboratory intensive interviews that can take up to 45 minutes each. In Oakland County, which has nearly 1.3 million residents, a team of 4 communicable disease nurses and 3 epidemiologists is handling interviews. As of July 24th, they reported 710 cases. During the COVID-19 pandemic, the county's health department had 12 additional staff members to help with outreach, said Kate Guzman, county health officer. That included 4 other nurses who were let go this past spring, she said. The county pulled in nurses from its hepatitis C and HIV programs to help with outreach. Guzman said that the state health department passes along as much information as possible to local health departments, but she said she believes the state often lacks details from federal partners. Staff at the Washtenaw County Health Department are investigating more than 770 cases, leaving less time for dealing with other illnesses or clinic appointments, spokesperson Susan Cerniglia said. We've got this huge volume of cases and so many people work on it, and it's not getting clearer, she said. In rural Shiawassee County, with a population of about 68,000 people, the health department will bring in qualified volunteers to help investigate about 450 cases, said Larry Johnson, its director. This really hit us so fast, he said. It was like, boom, here it is. And another related article. Source: lettuce supplier met with the White House. Lawmaker says that Taylor Farms complained to Trump administration about the FDA process. By City Mataholi, Bob Erickson, Tom Polansic, and Sarah Mortland from Reuters. U.S.-produced supplier Taylor Farms complained to White House and Food and Drug Administration officials about the government's inspection process this month. A source familiar with the meeting said, as Michigan reported a spike in cases of a parasitic disease tied to the company's lettuce from Mexico. Consumers have been on edge for weeks about whether it is safe to eat lettuce served at restaurants and elsewhere due to uncertainty over what products may be making people sick with cyclosporiasis, an intestinal disease that can cause explosive diarrhea. Questions persist, and many people have avoided fresh produce to sidestep potential infections. An FDA investigation linked the outbreak to iceberg lettuce served at Taco Bell restaurants sourced from privately held Taylor Farms' operations in central Mexico. Health officials are also searching for other potential sources. Some large retailers and restaurants shun produce from other growers in central Mexico out of fear about broader contamination of the region's farms, former FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb said. Representative Robert Garcia, the top Democrat on the House Oversight Committee, said in a letter that he launched an inquiry into Taylor Farms' role in the outbreak and whether the company attempted to influence the FDA's response. Taylor Farms donated millions to President Trump, met privately with the White House the night the FDA identified the lettuce as the source of this outbreak, and then reportedly tried to distance themselves from this outbreak, Garcia said. Taylor Farms did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Taylor Farms said it immediately removed all potentially affected products from the marketplace when questions arose about the source of the outbreak and voluntarily suspended production of all products at its facility in central Mexico. The FDA said Taylor Farms agreed to remove affected produce following extensive discussions, but the company did not meet an established 24-hour time frame for determining whether it would take voluntary action after the agency presented it with evidence, according to a source familiar with the situation. Another person familiar with the matter said Taylor Farms requested a meeting and spoke with officials from the White House and the FDA. The source described the meeting as Taylor Farms complaining about the government's inspection process. Taylor Farms did not immediately respond to a request for comment on the points raised by the two sources. The White House is closely monitoring the investigation into the outbreak, spokesman Kush Desai said. Any notion that the White House or Trump administration would ever compromise on health and safety of the American people is absolutely false, he said. The FDA is conducting a thorough and evidence-based outbreak investigation and has never walked back anything regarding the overwhelming epidemiological evidence, pointing to a shipment of shredded lettuce from Taylor Farms to Mexico. The U.S. outbreak so far resulted in 4,173 laboratory-confirmed cases, with health authorities aware of more than 7,400 additional suspected cases, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Michigan reported 9,253 cases on Monday, an increase of 1,077 cases since its last update on Friday. County health officials told Reuters they thought other unidentified items were making people sick besides Taylor Farms' lettuce from Mexico. Certainly, it doesn't tell the whole story with this one recall, said Avani Sheath, chief medical officer in Wayne County, Michigan, which includes Detroit. Removing products from central Mexico from supply chains should mitigate ongoing risks to consumers, said Gottlieb, the FDA's former chief. Speaking on CNBC on Monday, he said multiple outbreak clusters, including the Great Lakes region, New York, and North Carolina, appeared to be potentially linked to parsley and cilantro from central Mexico, although investigators have not determined the exact source. I think everyone believes that region is suspect, Gottlieb said. A lot of that product's being taken out of supply chains. And locally, Decatur man jailed on sex crime charges by Tony Reed. A Decatur man is jailed on charges that he repeatedly sexually assaulted two female victims under the age of 13. Laquanya Wallace, 58, was arraigned July 17th in Macon County Circuit Court on seven counts of predatory criminal sexual assault. He also was charged with one count of aggravated criminal sex abuse and a further charge of grooming, the act of persuading a minor to commit a sex offense. A heavily redacted sworn affidavit filed by the Decatur Police Department said detectives began an investigation on June 22nd after being contacted by an investigator working for the Department of Children and Family Services. The child victims were interviewed and used anatomically correct dolls to describe Walker making them perform a series of sex acts and also described being raped by the defendant. Detective Anna Oldham, who works with the police department's juvenile unit, quoted the children as describing sexual assaults being proceeded by Wallace, making them watch videos depicting child sexual abuse and adult sexual acts. Oldham said the DCFS investigator had initially been contacted by the mother of the victims, who had become alarmed after finding a child dancing inappropriately in front of the mirror with her pants pulled down. Wallace was arrested on July 16th and was described as denying the allegations and became angry when questioned by police. I asked Laquanya about his relationship with the children, Oldham said. Laquanya became very aggressive, advising he would like to beat the expletive out of them. I asked Laquanya if he was ever alone with the children, and he said he hated them and was never with them. Judge Jack Kiley denied Wallace pre-trial release at his arraignment after ruling he posed a real and present threat to public safety. The defendant is due back in court for preliminary hearing July 29th, when he will enter pleas to the charges against him. In this headline, ADM announces the appointment of Jeff Rowe to its leadership team. Archer Daniels Midland Company has appointed Jeff Rowe to the newly created role of Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer effective August 17th. In this role, Rowe will oversee ADM's commercial businesses, global manufacturing, and research and development efforts. Rowe will report to Juan Luciano, Chair of the Board and Chief Executive Officer. Rowe comes to ADM from Syngenta Group, a leading science-based agriculture company headquartered in Basel, Switzerland, where he has held a series of senior leadership roles since joining the company in September of 2016. Appointed CEO in January of 2024, he has led efforts to advance sustainable farming and AI-powered innovation, helping drive modern tailored solutions for stakeholders worldwide. Prior to Syngenta Group, he spent more than 20 years at DuPont Pioneer in a variety of executive positions, spanning strategy, international operations, biotech, and regulatory affairs. Jeff has an outstanding reputation in the industry as a proven leader with a strong track record of advancing innovation and operational excellence, Luciano said. I'm confident he will be a wonderful addition to ADM's global family of leaders. And from Mohammed, Medicare rally planned outside U.S. Representative Mary Miller's office. Medicare for All supporters from Coles County and other communities plan to hold a rally on Thursday, July 30th, outside the office of U.S. Representative Mary Miller. Rally organizers reported that this event is part of a national day of action organized by the National Nurses United and other partners for July 30th, marking the 61st anniversary of the signing into law of the original Medicare legislation. The area rally is set for 1:30 p.m. at 604 East Main Street in Mahomet. Participants are set to hand in a letter of support for Medicare for All, signed by more than 335 organizations supporting the expansion of this federal health insurance program for senior citizens and the disabled. Macon County Blood Drives. Blood drives scheduled in Macon County. Impact Life has announced community blood drives in Macon County. Officials say donations are desperately needed to offset the seasonal decline. While donations often decline during the warmer months, the need for blood remains constant for victims of trauma, surgical patients, those in treatment for cancer, and others who depend on life-saving blood transfusions. Right now, it's the hardest time of the year, said Stephen Gates, director of Blood Drive Partnerships. People are busy with vacations, travel, and events, and that takes a strain on the blood supply because people have less time to go out and donate blood. Blood drives are scheduled for the following: 3 to 6 p.m. Monday, August 3rd at the Antioch Christian Church, 5409 East U.S. 36th Indicator. 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Tuesday, August 4th in Classroom C of the Decatur Memorial Hospital, 2300 North Edwards Street. 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Sunday, August 9th, Holy Family Catholic Church Parish Center, 2400 South Franklin Street. 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Tuesday, August 11th, Macon County Health Department, 1221 East Condit Street. Potential donors must be at least 17 years of age and weigh more than 110 pounds. A photo ID is required to donate. To make an appointment, call 800-747-5401. That's 1-800-747-5401, or you can go to bloodcenter.org. Poll: Just 1/3 of us back the war in Iran, by Bo Erickson and Jason Lang. Just 1 in 3 Americans support the war in Iran, the lowest reading in Reuters Ipsos poll since the 5-month-old conflict's early days, with most respondents saying that President Donald Trump failed to explain his goals. The poll, conducted Friday through Sunday, also showed the Republican president's approval rating ticking higher to 37%, up 3 points from last month, when his rating tied the lowest of his presidency. Trump has offered shifting objectives for the conflict, such as aiding Iranians to topple their leaders, taking out Iran's ballistic missile capabilities, and preventing it from obtaining nuclear weapons. The poll found that 69% of Americans, including 4 in 10 Republicans, think Trump has not clearly explained the goals of the U.S. military involvement in Iran. White House spokeswoman Olivia Wales and Trump said that Trump will not make decisions based on fluid opinion polls and reiterated the president's resolve to prevent Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapon. What matters most to the American people is having a commander-in-chief who takes bold action to keep them safe, Wales said. Approval of the conflict has been below 40% since the U.S. and Israel launched strikes February 28th, a stark contrast to the opening months of other recent conflicts. While each had different context, the Iraq War from 2003 to 2011 had the support of about 70% of Americans in its early months. During the early days of the Afghanistan War, which lasted from 2001 to 2021, about 90% of the country backed the war, according to polling by Gallup. Public disapproval of the war is weighing on Trump and his Republican Party ahead of the November midterm elections, when the president's allies will defend slim majorities in the U.S. Congress. It's not clear why we started a war with them. I have no idea, said Alex Womack, a retired turbine repair specialist from Stockbridge, Georgia, who became a Republican in part because he liked how Republican President George H.W. Bush handled the Gulf War in 1991. Womack, who served in the U.S. Marine Corps during that conflict, said his support for Trump ebbed because of the war. "I don't think he's doing very well, personally," he said. To date, 18 American soldiers died in the conflict, while thousands died in Iran and in Lebanon, where Iran-allied fighters battled Israeli forces. The war pushed gasoline prices sharply higher, a blow to the finances of many Americans. Gasoline prices are averaging just over $4 a gallon nationwide, up from about $3 a gallon just before the war started February 28th. "This puts pressure on the party in a myriad of ways, all of them bad," said Alex Conant, a Republican political strategist and White House spokesman during the presidency of George W. Bush. The White House officials have been saying since January that they need to win economic arguments. "It's hard to win the economic arguments when you're clearly focused on foreign policy." Independent registered voters in the latest Reuters Ipsos poll said they were favoring the Democratic congressional candidate over the Republican by 36% to 20%. Independent voters also favored Democrats over Republicans on economic policy, the poll found. In campaigning for the 2024 presidential election, Trump said he would keep the U.S. out of enduring conflicts. He initially estimated the Iran war would last 4 to 5 weeks. He bristled over comparisons to other wars, including the Vietnam War, which lasted 2 decades and claimed the lives of more than 58,000 U.S. soldiers. Ryan Anderson, an independent from Fairburn, Georgia, who voted for Trump in 2024, said he thinks Trump should focus on domestic problems rather than on helping Israel or other allies. "My biggest thing is just focus on the people who are actually in the country," said Anderson, who works 2 jobs in security and data collection, and said he voted for Democrat Joe Biden in 2020. "I know we have allies and things like that, but there's a lot of people here that really need help." Since mid-March, the Reuters Ipsos survey has asked respondents whether they support or oppose military strikes on Iran. At that time, 37% said they supported the war. That compared to 27% approval on the day the war began, when the Reuters Ipsos survey also gave respondents the option to choose unsure, which 29% did. The latest Reuters Ipsos survey, which was conducted online and nationwide, gathered responses from 1,246 U.S. adults and had a margin of error of 3 percentage points in either direction. Illinois recognizes gambling addiction. Pritzker signs a bill increasing access to resources, by Maggie Doherty. Governor J.B. Pritzker signed a bill Friday that officially recognizes a gambling disorder as an addiction in Illinois. The legislation, Senate Bill 2749, updates the state's existing Substance Use Disorder Act to codify gambling addiction under the same framework as alcohol and drug use disorders, allowing the Illinois Department of Human Services Behavioral Health Division to offer programs and support to compulsive gamblers and affected families. The bill's sponsor, Senator Julie Morrison, Democrat of Lake Forest, said that recognizing the disorder under law would make it easier for the state to provide resources for those struggling with gambling addiction. "We see people who have alcohol dependencies, people who have drug addictions. I think we recognize those as disorders, and it's in statute, and we are providing different granting mechanisms, different ways to help those people across the state," Morrison said. "We haven't done that with gambling, and that's what this bill is about. It's just recognizing the fact that this is also another addiction disorder, and those people also need the help." The bill passed with broad bipartisan support this spring, receiving dissenting votes only from 11 Republican representatives in the House and passing unanimously in the Senate. Gambling disorder is often considered a hidden disease, as the symptoms can be less physically evident than alcohol or drug abuse. But according to experts, the dopamine release that compulsive gamblers receive when placing a bet creates a compulsion just as strong. Gambling also has one of the highest rates of suicide of any addictive disorder. The National Council on Problem Gambling estimates 1 in 5 compulsive gamblers have tried to take their own life. In Illinois, more than 1 million people, over 1 in 10 adults, are estimated to have a gambling addiction or be at risk of developing one. A recent investigation by Capital News Illinois and Illinois Answers Project found that people in Illinois lost over $7.7 billion gambling last year. That spending is fueled by compulsive gamblers who drain the inheritances, work bonuses, and nest eggs to fund their addiction. The ability to hide the disease and the lack of public awareness about it means that people don't often seek treatment, according to providers who specialize in gambling addiction treatment. When they do, the resources available to help them remain a leap year behind treatment options for alcohol and drug addiction, according to Ryan Otten, a policy analyst with the Illinois Association for Behavioral Health, or IAABH, which advocates for the prevention and treatment of addiction and mental illness. Still, Otten cheered the bill becoming law as a massive step forward. SUD, substance use disorder, has treatment facilities. There's not gambling facilities in the same way, Otten said. This is a big step because we're really bringing the attention first. Attention is the thing that gambling needs because it's something so normalized as a whole. According to DHS, recognizing gambling as an addiction under the law is intended to provide a level of legitimization for the disorder, helping to address public stigma. The bill took effect immediately after receiving Pritzker's signature. What's covered and what's not? Before the passage of the bill, compulsive gamblers in Illinois could only receive state-funded inpatient services if they also had a substance use disorder that required inpatient treatment. The law now allows the state to offer treatment for compulsive gambling on its own, according to IDHS. It also allows the state to provide additional training to addiction counselors and expands options for prevention services, such as offering early awareness and intervention programs in high schools and colleges. The Pritzker administration has made clear that gambling must be responsibly regulated, with strong consumer protections and meaningful investments in treatment and prevention, a spokesperson for Pritzker told Capital News Illinois in an email. Senate Bill 2749 builds on that commitment by strengthening Illinois' approach to gambling disorder prevention, education, and treatment. And some short pieces in reference to national and world events. Senate GOP confirms Clayton for intelligence. U.S. Senate Republicans on Tuesday confirmed President Donald Trump's nominee, Manhattan U.S. Attorney Jay Clayton, to be the nation's top spy, despite opposition from Democrats following an angry confirmation hearing. Clayton fills a role vacated in June when Tulsi Gabbard stepped down after a tenure marked by clashes with congressional Democrats who accused her of advancing Trump's political agenda and promoting debunked election claims. The vote was 51-47 to confirm Clayton for the job of Director of National Intelligence, overseeing the 18 U.S. intelligence agencies. The vote was along party lines, with Trump's Republicans backing his nominees and members of the Democratic caucus voting no. Georgia teen gets life for school shooting. A Georgia teenager will spend the rest of his life in prison for killing four people and injuring nine others in a 2024 shooting at Appalachie High School, a judge ruled Tuesday. Colt Gray, 16, who on Friday pled guilty to 55 counts, including murder and assault charges, appeared impassive as a judge in Barrow County Superior Court delivered his sentence. "Your crimes do reflect permanent incorrigibility," said Judge Nicholas Prim. "You do not seem to be tormented by what you did. You seem to relish following in the footsteps of the murderers that you idolize." And briefly, the economy. The U.S. trade deficit in goods narrowed in June amid a broad decline in imports, but the improvement was probably insufficient to prevent trade from again subtracting from economic growth in the second quarter. The report from the Commerce Department on Tuesday also showed exports dropping to a five-month low. Energy prices. Wholesale electricity prices spiked Tuesday by more than $500 per megawatt hour in the U.S. Midwest as wind generation came in below forecasts and hot weather taxed fossil fuel power plants. The price spikes were most severe along the Nebraska-Iowa border near coal plants operated by MidAmerica Energy, a utility owned by Berkshire Hathaway. And we're just out of time right now. That's the end of part one. I will be right back with part two in a couple of minutes. Hang in there.